Mr. Sherlock, Real Six. You were telling me about operations in the Vietro Valley when B Company had gone forward and to take a hill, and you were in defensive positions. What happened next that you recall?
We saw a little bit of shelling there, and there were one or two sorties from neighbouring German positions, and machine gun attacks and things like that, but nothing very strong. I do remember that there were at least two fellows killed there, both by rifle fire or sniper fire. We were required to get a forward observation officer up to B Company on this hill.
You don't know what the hill was called? You don't know what the hill was called?
That a name? Did not tell you that.
The book says it might be La Croquella, La Croquella, or Point 600.
Croce.
La Croce. So La Croquella, you were required to take an FOO up?
Yes, we and to find a route through to Corpo de Carmo, which was a small village at the foot of the hill. I took 12 people with me, I'm not very sure. And I took an FOO called Garland, Len Garland, who was at that time a captain with the 139 battery of 73. We had a few skirmishes and made our way up to Copacabana. When I got there, I discovered there were a few.
Do you remember much about the skirmish? Because you got the MC for that job, didn't you?
Well, as we were walking up, you know, there were little attacks from our right, where the Germans were. See, I can do better by, you know, drawing it. If the hill's there, and we are here, we've got to get there. This was woodland.
On the left?
On the left was woodland. And we were above the valley. And we could walk above the valley and look down to it. Now, there were German posts. Germans all the way along here.
On the right?
And as we were going along here, they would have a go at us.
Shoot at you.
And we would stop and have a go at them. And then we'd move on. So we got.
Did they cause casualties?
Well, we didn't really have any casualties. I'm going to say, when we got about halfway along, some of the chaps got so fed up that they left. And we were left with half a dozen of them. With half dozen of us and the FOO carried on.
What do you mean they got? They left.
And disappeared. They just disappeared.
And sorry, in a sense that they were not doing their duty.
In effect, they would say that they got lost.
Did you believe that? Did you believe that at the time?
Not really. No. Not really. But you, to some extent, you had to sympathise with the ones that could stand being shot at all the time, and the ones that couldn't. And as long as you could carry out your mission, as it were, you wouldn't make too much of an issue. Unless it was affecting everybody. So in this particular instance, these fellows actually said they got lost. But they turned up, eventually, at the
Copa de Cava.
So I had to accept in some ways that they had got lost. Although my own view is that they went and hid themselves out of the road.
In the woods.
Until they felt it safe to go on. Well, we struggled on until we got there. When we got to Copa de Cava, we found a small detachment of the York and Lancs already there. And they were in trouble a bit with tanks, which were coming from this direction.
From the right-hand side, then?
They couldn't actually get into Corbett because they couldn't get across the bridge. It was too narrow. But they could shoot at us quite easily. So what we did until it was dark, we did a lot of useless things, really. We just lobbed 2-inch mortars at them, which didn't do any work to the tanks, but it stopped the infantry or all the members of the tank getting out and coming across, because they didn't like being sunk. Once it was dark, there wasn't much they could do until the following day. The following morning, we went down and we picked up about half a dozen of these Germans. And then we took them back to our own camp, took them all the way back. And this, of course, opened out this as a route to supply the people on the Crocella and supply the Jürgen Lanks in the village. So,
now, when you were operating like that, a patrol through enemy territory, what formation would the patrol take? I mean, was it single line? What sort of... Because you wouldn't...
Whilst you were going down this path,
that's
all we did was keep a good 3 or 4 yards apart, as each man. And of course, that was because the fire was all this way.
So in a single line...
Had we been going that way, we'd have opened out that way.
Did you try and have people on, sort of like outriders, people to the right?
Oh yes, we had a couple of points, as it were. That's people who looked forward. Yes, a couple of points. And generally speaking, we used a corporal, a lance corporal, for that sort of job.
It's a dangerous job. So.
Oh yes.
And where would the officer go?
Well, in that particular instance, I led behind the points.
So there'd be a couple of points, then you, and then a line of with 3 yards between them,
yes, that's right.
Back down. Yeah. And would you be going at the door as quick as possible, or just marching?
In this particular instance, as fast as ever we could go. Because there was an urgency in the getting the FOO to the top. Because to some extent, the faster you went, the less likely you would be hit anyway.
Now, were you congratulated for this? Cause, I mean, it gets quite a splash in the history. When you got back, were you aware that you'd done anything special? Sometimes people don't know.
Really, no. When I was halfway back, I met the second in command. Italian coming down with the Russians.
Who would that be?
Colonel Willie's then Major Waddle. Because we'd been able to open up that route, you see, he knew that was then safe for them to go through, and he followed down that route. And so I knew that at least we'd done some good, you see.
Had you actually disposed of all the Germans who'd been on the right-hand side? What I'm thinking is, couldn't some more have just come?
We knew they'd given up shooting at that stage, you see. What always seems to happen is that I think one's got to remember that in this particular war in Italy, by and large, we're pushing people back all the time. So it wasn't as though they were trying to come forward. They were merely trying to stop themselves going back. So whenever you felt that, when they felt they'd had enough, they moved back. And this is really what happened here. That by the time we'd gone through and we'd shot at them and one thing and another, they decided, well, we're not getting anywhere here, we move back. And so they did.
So that, and they, as they were going so back, that
right.
It was safe then. They wouldn't come back again. They wouldn't come forward again.
We're reasonably safe. Now, I don't know that Dennis Warren had been shot at and that Vicky had dug the head, because we didn't have too much trouble the first bit. It was the second bit which was really troublesome. So the probability was that he was quite safe there. And certainly we'd come down there with these German prisoners and had no trouble. So the whole route then was quite clear.
Now, when were you told you'd got the MC? I mean, did you find out reasonably soon, or was it a year later?
No, it was fairly soon, wasn't it? Almost immediately. Because it was about a fortnight, I think, actually.
I mean, look, just looking ahead to that, did were you pleased? I mean, that's quite good to get an MC within a week or so of starting your active service. I mean, how did you feel about it?
Surprised. I think that is like, I think the biggest trouble with winning anything like that in a war like this is that people always then expect more of you, and you have an awful job giving up your reputation. And after that patrol, I tended to become the bloke who they sent out on patrol, and it's a lot of rubbish, really, because you really aren't any better than anybody else at it. Otherwise, the more you do, you get better at it. The more you do, you get better at it. But because you happen to have one good patrol, it didn't say you become an expert at all. You have one good patrol trouble because you're bumming lucky.
Right, so you'd opened up this way. What was the next phase of the action that you remember?
We went up to Vietri, first of all, from there, and then we moved into Naples itself, where we were building old houses and all sorts of things. It was pretty ropey sort of accommodation, but we were in accommodation in Naples. So from there...
Now, how were you how did you get on with the Italians? I mean, you must then have come into contact with the civilians. Because they'd been the enemy until quite recently. How did they get on with the Durhams?
What I do remember is that at this stage... we were very uncertain about how to treat the Italians at all. I think we wanted to treat them as as friends, but knew that the probability is that they hadn't quite got over being enemies, and so we were very chary of them.
It
was a long time before we weren't.
When you went into Naples, did you get any sort of reception from them?
No, the only sort of reception we got was requests for chocolate and biscuits and sort of thing. There was a lot of begging, but I can't say we had any harassment from them. There was no, they weren't anti at all, but we certainly didn't get any cooperation.
Now, the next thing I think is is on the Volturna. I mean, because we can't go through the campaign day by day, you know.
No.
But the crossing of the Volturno, what do you remember about that?
Well, I remember, first of all, we did have some rehearsal with pontoons and so on for getting across. But in the event, we paddled across with our rifles in the air. it was a dodgy sort of crossing.
Was it contested? I mean, did they open fire on you as you were crossing?
Oh, yes. There was a certain amount of firing. My particular company didn't have the worst of it. There were some parts of the crossing which had a very bad time. But certainly when we got to the other side, we had to dig in smartly, and we had to defend the position quite a long time. We were very wet too, and it wasn't very comfortable. That was the stage at which Mr. Collins, who I was talking to you, did some quite outstanding things. But that, of course, I wasn't with him, so I couldn't hear much about him. I think after the crossing of the Volturno, it was the first time I remember when we sort of were able to sit in positions and look at the German positions and be able to take pot shots at them.
About how far away were they, roughly?
Oh, 300 yards, I mean.
So quite close.
Yeah. I remember doing some patrols from there. They were purely and simply, I think, to reach the Tiano from like, is the Tiano the next left?
So this would be after you'd moved back from the, the Volturno had finished. There's nothing much else you remember about that. And you'd been sent to Francolisa, near Capua, or fairly near, overlooking the Tiano. You were doing patrols from there. About how big would a patrol be for that sort of operation? How many men?
About half a dozen. There's small ones. Anything between 10, 6 and 10.
And how would you prepare for a patrol?
Well, you just wanted sufficient. See, by and large, the patrols were night patrols. And the object of the patrol was to find out if there was any resistance in a particular district or area. And not necessarily to run extinguisher, but merely notice there.
So to reconnaissance patrol?
Intelligence patrol, as it were.
And so what preparations would you make? I mean, would you have any extra weapons or would you do any of this blacking of faces or anything like that that people
well,
thought?
We decide what we wanted to take with us, but we'd usually travel as lightly as we could because we're not going to take anybody on. Very rarely.
So you'd leave your kit?
I'd have a Tommy gun. Wouldn't bother with a small pack. Tommy gun, a water bottle, and plenty of ammunition. Isn't the ammunition, so you want your pouches. And maps if you need them.
Did you black your faces?
Yes.
What did you do to black them? What did you use?
Well, usually just dirt. But on occasion, when there was nothing else about, you'd use a blacking or something like that. But usually just dirt. As long as it was something.
And would you wear your steel helmet or?
Most often on a night patrol, you didn't bother with your cigar, but here because it made a noise. And you were hoping you wouldn't need it.
Now, how would you, I mean, when you go out on patrol, it's always a dangerous situation of being shot at from your own side. So would everybody be warned you were out? Or would there always a passwords, or what sort of precautions were taken?
Wherever you had to go out or come back, were normally told that you were going out, and you usually had a password. So you, but what you tried to do as far as possible is to go in and out of your own lines, and you made sure that the message got across. But sometimes, of course, you couldn't. You have to go out through somebody else's line, and then you rely on somebody else giving you the message. That could sometimes go wrong. And I have come back from patrol and been challenged. I don't think I was ever actually shot at. But I've come back and been challenged.
So,
and I didn't expect to be challenged.
So all that would be sorted out before you went out. Now, would you have anything in front of your position? I mean, would there be any barbed wire or mines or anything? Because you were advanced.
Very, very rarely. See, as I said before, there was no time when we were in defensive positions for us long enough to start and do that sort of thing. So we were moving forward all the time.
So the only thing you had to worry about was German defensive positions, wire and mines or whatever. And so you'd go out and... What formation would you be in? Would you be in a 10 abreast, usually, or what formation would you take?
If we were going frontal on to Germans, we'd probably take some... If there were half a dozen of us, we'd take a V4. Do something like that. One, two, three.
Three down each. You'd be the point, then, at the front.
Now, sometimes... You'd put a man out in front. It just depended. But if there's only half a dozen of you, the chances are that point was a patrol commander, which would be officer.
Now, the other men, I should have cleared up. You'd be carrying your Thompson, a Tommy gun.
Yeah.
But what would the men have? Just a Lee and file. Yeah. What about grenades?
Oh, they'd all have grenades. They'd all have one or two grenades in their boxes. And a supply of ammunition. And that'd be it.
And would there be an NCO as well, if you had, say, 6 to 10?
Sometimes yes, sometimes no. Generally speaking, you try and take one and see.
And they'd have a turn.
If you were leaving the rest of your platoon in a position, an effective position, you'd father leave plenty of supervision with them. But if we just come, you know, sometimes we did patrols from what you might call a rest position. In which case, you'd certainly take an NCO, yes. And very often you'd take a sergeant if you could.
And so if it was a sergeant, he'd probably have a Tommy gun.
Oh, yes.
It would be a Thompson, not a Sten, then.
No, we weren't. I don't think we ever had Stens in the line. I don't think we ever did. Although they were in use towards the end of the war, I don't think we ever had them. Sometimes on a patrol like that, if you could rake them together, we might have all had Thompsons.
So that was the preferred weapon?
Well, you felt happier with them, that was all.
Were they not a bit cumbersome and heavy for it?
They were heavyish. They were certainly heavyish. But somehow or other, you... like the idea of being able to let off a few at a time.
So you'd go out in a V formation, and then, like, when you crossed the Tiano, when you were in the patrol in the Tiano area, I mean, how far would you go, or be intending to go? Because then...
The way you would be briefed for this patrol would be, you'd probably be briefed by the colonel. And he might have some aerial photographs. If he didn't, we would have the maps out. And he would be quite specific about how far he wanted you to go. But what he couldn't be sure about is what obstacles were in the way. So he had to give you, a certain amount of leeway about the direction you took. But he would always want to be sure that between point A and point B, he wanted to know what was there. So he's bound to give you point B. And if he knew anything about the area, he would tell you. He had the information about it, he would tell you. So often you went out knowing a little bit about what might happen.
Now, if you ran into a German position, was your role not basically to observe and not be seen? In other words, not attract attention?
As far as possible, yes.
So your role wasn't to go in and fire?
You wouldn't let him know you were there if you could help it. But the chances are that he knew you were there, and that was how you found him.
So you'd run into fire, would be how you'd find them all.
That's right.
But if you didn't...
You found them because you came into fire.
But other than that, if you did see them first, you were just meant to go report it, and go not to engage in unnecessary action. Would that be the rule, or...?
Well, your concern then was whether or not he was in strength, or whether it was just an isolated post. And if it was a long way short of your ultimate objective, you had to find some way of getting past him and finding out what was beyond. And that wasn't always easy.
So under those circumstances, would you attack an isolated position?
Only if I was in a position to attack. In other words, if there were sufficient others to attack whatever it was. See, if we could tell it was purely and simply a couple of fellows with a machine gun and there was half a dozen of us, yes, we'd probably try and shift them.
Would you try and do it?
On the other hand, if we thought that by starting an attack like that, we would alert a lot more, we might try and avoid it. We might try and avoid it. In Italy, you know, the big trouble was that, generally speaking, you have to face a network of drainage ditches. And very often you couldn't take a straight line. You would get to a drainage ditch and you'd have to work along it. And this, of course...
How deep were they? Well, they were too deep to...
Oh, yes.
You couldn't just jump across.
Sometimes you could jump, sometimes you couldn't. But they're always, nearly always full of water at the time we were there, anyway.
How deep, roughly? I know they're all different, but...
Well, 3 or 4 feet deep.
So not something you'd want to wade through?
Well, you didn't want to wade through. And, of course, you didn't know either. Black night, you see water. You were chatty about whether you had dinner